Although the inhabitants of Vrajabhumi, the cowherd men and cowherd women, previously had more affection for Krishna than for their own children, now for 1 year, their affection for their own sons continuously increased, for Krishna had now become their sons. There was no limit to the increment of their affection for their sons, who were now Krishna. Every day they found new inspiration for loving their children as much as they loved Krishna. Okay, I'll read the next verse myself. Itam atmatmanatmanam vatsa pala mishena saha palayan vatsa povasham chikri devanagoshtayo. In this way, Lord Sri Krishna, having himself become the cowherd boys and groups of calves, maintained himself by himself. Thus he continued his pastimes both in Vrindavan and in the forest for 1 year. Purport. Everything was Krishna. Yeah. The calves, the cowherd boys, and their maintainer himself were all Krishna. In other words, Krishna expanded himself in varieties of calves and cowherd boys and continued his pastimes uninterrupted for 1 year. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's expansion is situated in everyone's heart as the Supersoul. He expanded himself. Similarly, instead of expanding himself as the Supersoul, he expanded himself as a portion of calves and cowherd boys for one continuous year. So, as in most of Krishna's activities, he accomplishes many things at once. Very effective actor to accomplish so many things at the same time. He's, as we discussed last time, he's fulfilling the urge, the long-held desire of the grown-up cowherd ladies and the cows, who always wanted to have an experience similar to what Mother Yashoda experienced, actually having Krishna as their son. It's one thing to love Krishna with a parental affection from a distance, like a neighbor or an aunt or an uncle. Another thing to actually have Krishna in your house as your son. There are ways you can enjoy that or relish that relationship that you cannot in the same way from a distance. So Krishna removed that distance. He actually entered everybody's house and drank from the breasts of each of the gopis sitting on their lap and stayed in their homes. And of course, not only the ladies, not only the mothers, but the fathers, the uncles and the aunts, the brothers and sisters. The cowherd boys are the vayasyas. Those boys are roughly same age as Krishna. They go to the forest with him. But Krishna doesn't take the older boys, 12, 13, 14-year-olds. They don't come with him. They're too old. And the little tiny boys, they're too young. So the boys are too young and too old to go with Krishna to the forest. Now they got a chance. Krishna came to their houses. So the brothers and the sisters of the cowherd boys got Krishna's intimate association. They got to have Krishna as their brother and sister. Brother. Anyway, everyone now is enjoying a more intimate relationship with Krishna. This affection, sneha, there are different levels of development of love. Sneha is actually specifically something that's experienced only in the higher rasas. I don't remember the definition of it. But it's very intimate affection. You know, you have an intimate, close relationship, and there is a, not casual, but a very close kind mood to that relationship. It's not at all distant or reverential. It's not, it doesn't, it, when there's sneha, when there's that kind of affection, we don't care about who's superior, who's inferior, who's dominating, who's dominated. It's just, it all melts in the pot of love. The question of who's on top and who's on the bottom, who's in charge, who's subordinate. And that is the closeness, the intimacy that now all, basically all the Brajpasis are able to enjoy, for, especially for that 1 year that Krishna becomes literally their children, their child. Yeah, Prabhupada sums it up, everything was Krishna. So that's accomplished. It's a big thing to arrange for it that everybody can have the most intimate relationship with Krishna in their own rasas, especially the Vatsalya rasa. Now Krishna also accomplishes for himself to enjoy playing with himself. He plays with so many devotees. How about if I do it all myself? I'll be all my friend. I'll be my all my friends myself. Let's see what that's like. So Krishna enjoys that experience. Countless thousands of boyfriends, countless thousands of calves that they're taking care of, but Krishna is himself all of them. Like a child has a box of toy soldiers. And he sets the soldiers out and has wars, sends them on parade. It's all himself. He's just pushing the toy soldiers around. He's all playing with himself. Solitaire. There's a certain enjoyment in that also. When you play with other friends, they may not want to do what you want to do. There may be quarrels. But if you play all by yourself, there's no quarrels. You can do what you want. So Krishna wanted to enjoy that also for 1 year. Let me play, you know, my friends are always disagreeing with me and sometimes criticizing me and fighting with me. So this year I'll play all by myself. I'll be everybody. He enjoyed that. So many purposes are served. And he totally defeated Brahma. Totally confused Brahma by this show of magic. That was also accomplished. The defeat, even without any separate endeavor, in the course of this enjoyment, he completely defeated the Lord of the universe and brought him to his feet. So that's several things that Krishna accomplishes by this pastime. To participate in such a pastime, to be privileged to actually be given such, to be dealt with in such a way by God that he becomes your son or your brother, your playmate, requires that you're very, very fit for that. No ordinary person can have the intimate association of God. We can, the Vaishnavas, can experience something of it by meditation, by hearing about, by speaking about to others, by thinking about, by deep meditation on Krishna's pastimes. We gradually come to understand or to taste, to directly taste the experience of rasa, which is the essence of life. So the Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, and then Smaranam. These are our basic processes. To enter into directly the participation as a member of these pastimes, that is much, much more advanced. That is Sarup Siddhi. To actually get your spiritual identity and join Krishna's pastimes. That we can expect very quickly. Cannot. But we can aspire for Shravanam and Kirtanam, we should be doing now. We're actually take a vow to do Shravanam and Kirtanam, minimum every day. At least chant our 16 rounds. At least study the Bhagavatam every day in the association of devotees. This is our minimum. We're obliged to engage in Shravanam and Kirtanam. And we are aspiring to enter into this Smaranam, which is the next stage. To actually become absorbed in our minds and hearts in remembering these pastimes. Remember. Why is the word remember? Usually, in the Nyaya epistemology, Smaranam is considered an unreliable source of knowledge, remembrance, smriti. It's considered an unreliable way of knowing things. Because when you remember something, you're experiencing something that isn't there anymore. It's a kind of direct perception. It's in the heart. But you're seeing something that isn't there anymore. It's in the past. I remember, someone punched me in the face yesterday. But that was yesterday. It hurt yesterday. It doesn't hurt the same way today, just remembering it. Of course, you may experience a mental pain. You may remember the pain, but it's not the same physical experience. It's gone. It's over with. So remembrance, therefore, is considered the gyanam, the definition of valid knowledge, correct knowledge. This is the question of, excuse me for using a fancy term, epistemology. The branch of philosophy that deals with how do you know anything for sure. Basically, the question is, can you know anything for sure? And if so, how can you do it? That's the whole project of epistemology. Otherwise, philosophy is just guesswork. But can you actually know anything for sure? And if so, how do you do it? So the investigation is going on. Nyaya school of philosophy founded by Gautama Rishi gives their opinions. That yes, there are valid ways of knowing things for sure. If you see something with your own eyes or experience it with your other senses, it's almost certainly sure. Unless your senses are defective, you can usually trust them. And deduction, if applied properly, is usually valid. That's logic. Logic usually, the rules of logic are fixed. If you don't misapply them, if you don't misuse them, then they're valid means of extending your knowledge. And verbal testimony, shabda praman, when received from a proper authority, is also valid. Of course, it can be misunderstood, or you could receive information from someone who's not a real authority, but if the method of hearing from reliable authority, if the method is done properly, then you get valid knowledge. So jnana is defined as, or prama is the more technical term, certain knowledge. Knowledge that you know is true. Information that you know is true. can be defined in terms of how you receive it, but the definition gives the stipulation that smriti is not valid knowledge. That the information you receive from dreams and from memory are not reliable. That's the normal material situation. If I remember something, maybe I remember it wrong. Maybe it never happened. Maybe it happened differently than I remember it. So you can't trust memory. It's not a source of reliable knowledge. But that's in the material plane. Remembrance of Vishnu, Vishnu Smaranam, is a different thing. First of all, Vishnu and his activities, the object of our remembrance, what we're remembering, is not something that is temporary. It's permanent, eternal. Vishnu is eternal. Everything he does is eternal. All his qualities are eternal. All his relationships with his devotees are eternal. So it's not a problem that the thing I'm remembering isn't present or doesn't exist anymore. It does. The leelas of Vishnu that I'm trying to remember are still going on. Otherwise, why would we be advised to meditate on things that happened 2 million years ago with the hope of joining them? You know, I'm a devotee of Lord Ramachandra, and I want to join his pastimes. I want to become one of those monkeys in the army. You know, there are devotees like that who want to become a monkey in Ramachandra's army. But if it happened 2 million years ago and it isn't going to happen again, you don't have any hope. You can think about it, you can remember it and enjoy it, but how are you going to become a monkey in an army that stopped existing 2 million years ago? If it only happened once and it never happened again. If it's a temporary event. So why, unless the leelas of the Lord are eternal, why would devotees who are otherwise intelligent and sensible try so hard to meditate on them with the purpose of joining, of entering them? How can you enter something that doesn't exist anymore? So that's an argument based on the sensibility of intelligent devotees who would not do a foolish thing, that these pastimes probably are eternal. The activities of the Lord are perpetual, and therefore remembering them is not the same as remembering some temporary event that is finished. The purpose of remembering the pastimes of Vishnu is to actually make contact with them and join them. But there is a proper method of doing it. Like all spiritual disciplines, and this is a discipline, it's not a free-for-all. We should practice with the guidance of qualified authorities. Just like you want to become an athlete, you want to gymnastics? You want to, swing from the ceiling and do so many tricks and show so many feats of your strength. Better you be trained up by a competent coach. Learn how to do it right. Otherwise, you'll just break all your bones trying to learn how to do it by yourself. So, to learn how to enter into this meditation on the Supreme Lord, we have to be trained. Without guru, there's no progress in Krishna consciousness. Without service to the guru, we want to... It is correct that our aim is to enter into this advanced devotional service of remembering Krishna and his leelas in whatever rasa we're going to focus on, whatever is our sthayi bhava. We want to eternally remember Krishna and eventually even try to join those pastimes. That is real devotional service. But how can we have any hope of attaining that? The one sure method is guru seva, service to the spiritual master, service to those who already have access to these transcendental activities. By serving them, by getting their blessings, and by assisting them in their service, we're able to purify our hearts of all our contamination and be given the right and the empowerment to sit down and remember Krishna. But the basis of it is guru seva, service to the spiritual masters. This is really the emphasis of our sampradaya. We are an orthodox sampradaya. We don't take things cheaply. And the foundation of our orthodoxy, of our conservative strictness, is that we expect that at whatever success we accomplish, it's accomplished on the basis of service to the Vaishnavas. Chadiya Vaishnava Shiva Nistar Payechi Keba Narottama Das Thakur Singh. That if you put aside, if you neglect the service of the Vaishnavas, how can you expect to ever be delivered? We are particularly, we're servants of Srila Prabhupada. He has purchased us. He bought us in the slave market of Maya. You know, he owns us. And we're his servants. So we're obliged to basically, whether we're serving directly, whether he is direct disciples, or we're a disciple of the disciple, or of the disciple's disciple. Anyway, we are servants of Srila Prabhupada. We have to serve his purposes. And that's how we'll be able to enter into the meditation of Krishna's pastimes. That's how, when we sit down and read these leelas, we will get the full experience. When we're fixed in the service of Srila Prabhupada, to the extent that we are. Okay, so are there any questions or comments? Yes?
Yesterday in the Bhagavatam,
yes.
We were speaking about the meditation.
Yes.
Guru Sevananda Prabhu was speaking about his experience he had at some time at a Christian monastery.
Yes.
That they had a retreat.
Yes.
And they were doing some type of meditation. They would go deeply. I guess they would take parts of the scriptures and really contemplate and meditate on these. So it was a type of meditation of absorption like this in the scriptures. So I'm wondering how much can this be followed in our ISKCON? How we can implement this deep and very introspective study of Srila Prabhupada's book.
Well, we can develop special programs for that, and Prabhupada encouraged it. You know, the courses like the VIHE were developed because Prabhupada gave instructions. He wanted such things. A devotee study his books, take special care, make special arrangements to study his teachings in depth and to sit down and think about them. That, you know, that Prabhupada didn't intend that ISKCON just be, you know, just passionately engaged in physical work. We should be thoughtful. We should give time to thought and arrange things for such. But it's all on the basis of Guru Seva. Because the Guru asks us to study, therefore we study. If the Guru tells us not to study, if Prabhupada told us not to study, we wouldn't study. But he didn't say that. You know, but if what our purpose is to become 100% fixed on the thought of Krishna, then basically it's to do what Prabhupada asked us to do. We have to understand what Prabhupada's instructions are, what his desires and intentions are, and try to implement them. The rest is details. Yes?
Okay, this might sound funny, but for example, you go to a meditation group, a bogus meditation group, they may sit down and do some reading and then try to concentrate their mind on the void. But for example, can we take some pastimes and really be thoughtful about them and really like try to absorb our mind
maybe,
and concentration
yes.
like that?
Maybe to some extent, but only to the extent that we have earned the qualification to actually fix our minds on Krishna. Maybe we haven't so much. Maybe we're not ready for that. It depends. When you're ready for it, it'll come naturally. You know, you may say, I have no time. I'm not allowed to have any time. Krishna will arrange it. He'll give you time. Even if you only have 10 minutes, Krishna will, you know, reveal himself to you for 10 minutes. You know, when you're ready for it. When you're ready for it. It comes naturally. It should not be imitated artificially. And certainly you shouldn't abandon service to Guru so that you have time for meditation. It won't work. We've seen so many cases where it didn't work. It backfired. Devotees left the active association and the service of Prabhupada's mission, went off to Radhakunda by the dozens, even hundreds, and almost every one of them, a few months later, they were back in the material world, increasing their material entanglement. Almost every one of those devotees who went to Radhakunda, you know, unauthorized, or even rejecting Prabhupada, rejecting ISKCON, they flopped in almost every case. Went and took some other guru, entered what they thought was, you know, the deep path of the Krishna consciousness, and it lasted 2 or 3 months in almost every case. And they were back in the wherever they came from, back doing more material things than they were doing before. Almost every case. So that's not the way to do it. You know, not to abandon Prabhupada, the service of Prabhupada's mission. By serving Prabhupada's mission, we'll be given the opportunity to enter into this deeper devotional service. By chanting our rounds, doing our prescribed service, doing what we can to push on Prabhupada's mission, Krishna will give us. The holy name will reveal to us the inner secrets of Krishna consciousness. We don't need to go find some esoteric guru to give us the real information. Prabhupada will give it through the holy name, through his books, and in the heart.
Whatever the love and affection of these elder gopis, after 1 year, towards their their sons, cowherd boys, so it came to the same level like it was previously, before 1 year? Or?
No, it became more.
I mean, after 1 year, it became more.
It's becoming more and more. This is to increase their love for Krishna and their love for their own sons. When Krishna becomes your son, then you become extremely attached to your son because it happens to be Krishna. But even if your son is not Krishna, that happened in this one case, temporarily, and then after the year, they got back their original sons and they weren't Krishna. But even if your son isn't Krishna directly, if he belongs to Krishna, then being attached to your son is also spiritual. If he's a devotee, and you love him as a devotee, the more you love him, the more you're going to love Krishna, and vice versa. So the love for the sons and the love for Krishna, when the sons are, in the case when the sons are Krishna especially, but even in the case when the sons are just Vaishnavas, and you understand that they're Vaishnavas, and you love them as Vaishnavas, and what you want is that they increase their commitment to Krishna, not decrease it. When that's the expression of your love, then it's natural for that love to increase unlimitedly, more and more. And it's good. It's beneficial. In the material world, when you love your child for material purposes, and what your ambitions for the child is that he become just as much materially entangled as you and even more, then that's harmful. That's dragging yourself and your son down. But when you love your son as a Vaishnava, and you want to see him become a sannyasi, a preacher, a great devotee, then that's beneficial. And it's natural. It's part of the natural progress of Krishna consciousness, that the love for that child will increase more and more, without limit. Apsima is the word in this verse. Without any limit, it just keeps on increasing.
Sometimes we have seen that in third canto, sometimes the Uddhava, when he's in ecstasy, when Vidura is asking about Lord Krishna and his departure to his own abode, so he, by listening from Vidura about these questions about Lord Krishna, so he becomes overwhelmed, he came to ecstasy position. So again, so his love also is coming down, and also he is not crying like this. And
No. It's not that his love is diminishing. He's just turning off the symptoms so he can talk to Vidura. You know, he's losing his control of his mind and senses. He can't talk because he's experiencing ecstasy. So he has to control himself in order to answer Vidura's questions. It doesn't mean he has to turn off the love, but he has to, you know, subdue the symptoms, that's all. The external symptoms. It doesn't mean, like, when Prabhupada came to preach, that he literally came down to a lower level. He became a material person in order to be in the material world. The pure devotee, when he comes to preach, he's a Paramahamsa. It's not that he has to become less. He has to become only a Majjhima Bhakta in order to preach. He has to lose half of his Krishna consciousness in order to be able to preach. No, no, this is external change. He has to act like a middle-class devotee. Act like an ordinary person in order to be able to talk to ordinary persons. You know, be careful to put on his tilak before he takes prasadam, and act, you know, dress decently, and don't act like an avaduta, just so people won't think he's crazy and listen to him. But it's not that the Paramahamsa stops being a Paramahamsa in order to preach. He stops acting like a Paramahamsa, maybe. Acts more normally, but that's just external. Same thing with Maitreya. He doesn't stop being ecstatic, but he stops freely expressing it. He has to control himself externally in order to have a conversation with the Dura. Okay?
And also, this gopi is never able to...
Well, also, his consciousness was turned to the spiritual world. He has to pay attention to the material world in order to sit there and talk to Uddhava. That doesn't mean losing his Krishna consciousness. It just means turning his attention to the matter at hand. Yes?
Also, this elder gopi is never able to recognize that... we got Krishna as their son afterwards.
No, they didn't know it. Even Balaram didn't figure it out until the last couple of days. We read that in the next verse. So, no, it was a trick, and they didn't know what was happening. They didn't know it was really Krishna. It would be different. They would say, well, this is not really my son, this is Krishna. It would be strange. It wouldn't be the same experience. But they were really thinking, this is my son. So they couldn't be told, no, that's not your son, it's Krishna. You know, they weren't told that. Okay? Yeah. Yes?
You said this, smarana is not accepted by these Nyaya people.
Material smarana, yeah.
Okay.
It's not accepted as a means, a pramana. It's actually, it's excluded from the definition of jnanam. It's smriti, swapna smriti vyakti riktam. It's knowledge, it's knowledge that is correct, yatartyam, corresponds to the facts. But also it has to exclude the categories of remembrance and dreaming. Because even if a dream or remembrance may sometimes correspond to the facts, it doesn't do it reliably. Sometimes it doesn't. So even if a dream tells you something correct, or a remembrance tells you something correct, you're never sure that it will. Sometimes it'll tell you the correct thing and sometimes it won't. So it's unreliable.
But experience is based on remembrance. Like whenever a person meets a situation, he reacts based on his experience.
So because we depend on remembrance, we depend on inference, and we depend on hearing from unreliable authorities, therefore normal experience in everyday life is usually unreliable. Because we can't live just according to what we see with our own eyes. You know, the Charvaka philosophers, Loktayakakas, the materialists who follow Charvaka Muni, they say the only reliable source of knowledge is direct perception. Everything else is unreliable. And then the logicians laugh at them. Okay, Mr. Charvaka, why are you so upset that your wife is pregnant from some other man? You know, you have no direct experience of the fact. You can't prove it. You weren't there. You didn't see it yourself. Somebody told you. You know, that this man made your wife pregnant. Why are you so upset? You have no direct perception, so you have no way of knowing it. So, you know, it's ridiculous to try to live just on the basis of what you can't. You can't live a real life based on just what on absolutely reliable evidence. We don't have enough of it in the material world. So many of the things that we accept on belief. My mother tells me this man is your father. I believe her. Maybe she's lying. Maybe someone else is really my father. But I have to believe her, you know, in order to live my normal life. I assume this man's my father. But so normal life is never the knowledge is never completely reliable in material life.
The intention is not the intention is not to say that the Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam.
No, no, that's spirit. That's a whole different kind of Smaranam. That's spiritual Smaranam.
Yes.
Because what you're remembering is something eternal. Eternal and certain and absolutely true. So remembering something that's absolutely true and eternal is different than remembering some material thing that's only temporary. That's a different process. You know, we normally talk about remembering something in the past. But Vishnu's pastimes are not only past, they're also present and future. So we're remembering not only what happened 2 million years ago, but it's also happening now and it will continue happening forever. That's what we're remembering. It's a different kind of remembering. No, the Nyaya philosophy, they don't try to deal with that, with the supernatural. They're describing normal, the material world. They talk about the soul, but they don't talk about the life of the soul. They just try to prove the existence of the soul. That's as far as they go. Yes.
I have one question. It's just some doubt which arises while listening to all these pastimes. So we were in the spiritual world, and then we left this place. And in some sense, there is some special, because we have some special relationships with Krishna. So our place is free in some sense. So, and in these pastimes, you can see that Krishna, he explains himself to all these boys. It was a very exact replica of all these boys and the cows and so on.
Yes.
So, and my question is Krishna is missing us really?
Yes.
In the spiritual world, or he can just
The way it's described in Bhagavatamrita and elsewhere, yes, Krishna is missing the absent devotees, the ones who fell down. You know, he's suffering in absence of the devotees who were missing from his pastimes. The pastimes go on anyway. But so-and-so, you know, he didn't show up today because he fell down into the material world. Sorry, you know, he'll be back soon. And he and the others are missing him. And when he comes back, they're very happy that he came back. Yeah.
Even though he can replace us, but he is still missing.
Replace?
Replace us in these pastimes.
He's not going to do that. You know, we don't need him anymore. We'll get somebody else. Krishna's not like that. He, you know, he wants you, not somebody else.
Like did he tell that the character boys were not there for a year? Oh, I can replace him anyways. I don't need these
character boys.
That's maybe what
this. Well, that happened once. The Krishna showed he could do it, and he wanted to experience it, but he doesn't normally do that. And that was just temporary. He brought the boys back. He didn't kick them out permanently. He didn't replace them permanently. Just for, you know, for the duration of the pastime. And Brahma started it. It's not his fault. Brahma's the one who hid them in the cave. But normally Krishna's not going to, you know, forget him. I don't need him. I'll replace him. Krishna doesn't do that. Every soul is unique and can't be replaced. Cannot be replaced. Every soul. Madhavan has something. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Actually, I had exactly the same as Sarva Gyaprabhu's when he asked his. I just wanted to offer a possible explanation, just to check it with you, that as we discussed that day, Krishna's pastimes actually never discontinue in a sense, and the boys were still there taking
never
lunch.
Never discontinue,
and Krishna was still happily taking lunch with his boys in his Aprakata Lila. So in a sense, he didn't really dismiss them. He didn't get them out of his way to enjoy himself by himself, but he played with them in a way which was not perceptible by anybody else in Vrindavan.
You're looking at a higher level When you start bringing in the Aprakata Lila, even Shukadev doesn't deal with that.
Yeah.
But so you're raising it to a more complicated level, that everything's going on eternally. Yes.
Yeah. But Acharyas explain like that, because otherwise
it would contradict
the principle that Krishna never wants to separate from his devotees, you know, for his own sake.
Right. Yeah. Krishna's never really separated. The devotees are never really separated from him, because the tie is there on the unmanifest level. Yes. Yes.
Actually, I had a question about epistemology, if it's not too boring for everybody. Because you explained that if epistemology deals with the task of knowing, how do we know, in other words, how do we know that we know something?
Two questions. Can we know anything for sure?
And how do we do it?
If we can, how do we do it?
So, like, we have, if direct perception of any pramana, for that matter, is taken to be a source of valid knowledge, we have a statement, like something I perceive is truth. But in order to make the statement, we should know what truth is. In other words, otherwise we wouldn't be able to equate something which we experience with the truth. So how do we answer that question in Vedic epistemology?
You have to separate two things. Knowing something for sure, and being able to say that you know it, and being able to prove that you know it. These are three different things. So you may be able to know something for certain without being able to formulate it and without being able to prove it. Being able to formulate it and prove it, that takes verbal ability. But even if I'm a dumb animal and can't put a sentence together because I don't know any language, if you hit me with a stick, I know the pain. The pain is real. And I really hate you because you hit me with a stick. That's a real experience. Whether I can analyze it or explain it or prove it, it's irrelevant. It's a real experience. So sensory perception has a reality to it, beyond, even apart from whether you can explain it or prove it.
Well, thank you. What I'm driving at is that it looks like only in Vaishnava tradition, Vaishnava epistemology, we can really answer that question, because we have that notion of self-evident original experiences, which we compare everything else to, not in a conscious way, but in subconscious way, things which gives us the ability to know something, because we originally experienced eternally Krishna's pastimes and the reality of the spiritual world, because otherwise, you know, we have to logically have to come down to Mayavada platform, when, because all knowledge is doubt, even the fact that I know something is doubtful in itself, because it's not based on anything else besides my experience.
Yeah, but if we have to, in order to know everything, we don't know anything for sure until we experience Krishna's, go back to experiencing Krishna's pastimes like we originally did. That's tough. Because right now, here we are trying to understand Krishna consciousness and to properly execute Krishna consciousness according to that understanding. But we're having a hard time. We're not ready to revive our remembrance of Krishna's, of that original, unquestionable experience. We're not tuned into that right now. So we can't use that as the basis of our knowledge. Our direct experience of Krishna's pastimes, because we're not right now. I'm not experiencing directly Krishna's pastimes. Maybe someday in a million years from now I'll be able to, but right now I can't. So I have to rely on something I can actually get my hands on. Like basic, reliable, authoritative knowledge, which I get from Guru, Shastra, and Sadhu.
Oh yeah, that's clear. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that the basis of our perception is such, even the perception, like we inherit the three qualities of Satchitananda from the spiritual world.
Yes.
We inherit them, and we don't question them, ever, but they have their own origin. That's what allows us to perceive things. It's not a matter of reviving Krishna's pastimes in our heart in order to be able to know, but the fact that we know means that we knew it before, and now we compare everything to that.
Well, yeah, it's cogito ergo sum. I think, therefore I exist. And I always think, therefore I must exist always. Yeah, because we're such a Dananda, because we are spiritual entities, therefore we're able to experience and remember. Yes, yes. Thank you. Yes, Prabhu.
Can we enter Krishna's pastime without Adhikara?
No.
So then
we will not be allowed. So there's guards. There's guards at the door, will not let us in.
Okay, so next question is then,
How did then it means Kaliya and all these Kamsa, they had adhikara to enter into Krishna's Leela?
Yes, they earned the adhikar. Kamsa by being beat to a pulp almost to death by Krishna and feeling remorse, he acquired whatever missing adhikar he was lacking. He already had basic adhikar. Krishna didn't kill him because he wasn't a complete demon. He wasn't so hateful of Krishna. He was just, you know, grouchy, angry snake. And he tried to kill Krishna, but not out of hatred. So because he wasn't an enemy of Krishna, therefore Krishna didn't kill him. So he had some adhikar. He had some qualification. Krishna would not have given him his personal association unless he deserved it. We don't know, you know, who Kaliya was inside his heart before. He wasn't a completely bad person. He had some qualification to be given the honor of having Krishna's personal contact. And then he graduated even above that to be able to be given complete, you know, liberation and devotion to Krishna by Krishna's fighting with him and beating him and dancing on his heads. And then Kamsa also. Kamsa is originally one of the gatekeepers of Vaikuntha. He's a devotee anyway to start with. And he was always thinking about Krishna. Constant meditation on Krishna. In hatred, but constant meditation. That was his qualification. To get what he got from Krishna.
But then, I mean to say, we take example of Kaliya, then generally, I mean to say, we are talking that adhikara is Krishna prem for us.
Yes.
But then Kaliya is not, he's not having Krishna prem, at least before.
Not having Krishna?
He was not having Krishna prem, at least before, it seemed like that, at least before the pastimes.
Yes, yes, he was not Krishna. One thing is, he was not, you look at Kaliya before, you wouldn't think he was in any way Krishna conscious. But he must have been in his past life, in his previous life. Maybe you know the history. He must have been some sort of devotee in the past life in order to evolve this way. If you have no interest in Krishna, Krishna's not going to enter your life as a friend or an enemy. He'll just leave you alone if you're not interested in him. So Kaliya must have been interested in Krishna in his previous life. Do you know the history? Ah, Sarvika can explain the history of it.
I don't remember the details, but it was one sage. He was meditating on some mountain, and he was meditating. Then another sage came, and he started to speak with this sage. Who are you? What are you doing here? Why did you come here? And this sage, he told, okay, I just want to meditate along with you. But he was like, no, you shouldn't stay here. It's my place. You should go away. And then at that point, another sage, he saw this incident and he told that you're like a snake. He's like a snake dealing with others, so you will become a snake.
So this is a story from is it a Puranic story or?
It was told by Purunchanda Prabhu. I don't know the.
Purunchanda Prabhu.
Purunchanda Prabhu. Purunchanda Prabhu.
Purunchanda.
Yeah.
I heard another story.
Yes. Okay, another story you heard. Be good if you can identify the source, but.
It was from the body. It was usually very, very checkful of where he's hearing this.
Okay.
I don't exactly. Probably from a Purana, where he says that it was a devotee who took a vow that he was inviting lots of sages and lots of great personalities to his house, and took a vow that I will always drink the water that they wash their feet. But then Krishna tested him by sending a leper who was a great devotee, and then he washed his feet, but then he didn't want to drink it, and he just sprinkled it on his head, and then Krishna punished him. And then in his next life, to punish him, Krishna stepped on
his head.
Because he took the vow of always drinking the Charanamrita from the lotus feet, but because of seeing the leper, the devotee leper, he wanted to follow that and just put it on his head.
Okay, so you got two versions. You can take the one you like of Kaliya's history. Yeah.
Or actually verify it.
Okay, fine. So your point is that they they must have been come in contact with Krishna.
They must have had some connection with Krishna in a past life.
Now, my next question is, like, yes. I don't know, I heard this from a very authentic source, that from one Maharaj in Gaudiya Math. So he was telling that when Putna, Krishna made him his mother.
Yes.
But then when she went to Golok, she didn't want to stay with Yashodama, so she went back to Kamsa.
I
want to ask you whether...
I never heard that, I don't know. She went to Golok and didn't want to stay there?
The point he was making is, I don't know, he was telling that Acharyas make this point, that if we don't have a desire to serve Krishna, even if we enter Krishna's pastime, by Krishna's mercy, we are not going to serve him. So
Don't think Krishna can do anything, but it doesn't make sense that we're going to be allowed to enter Krishna's pastimes if we're not very seriously interested about them. Mm-hmm. We have to have a qualification, and the main qualification is to be very eager to join in those, to join remembrance of those pastimes, and maybe to join those pastimes. Unless you want to make that your whole life, you're not going to be allowed into it. It's a very privileged and very confidential realm. Krishna, there's so many safeguards not to let materialistic or uninterested or disqualified people anywhere near Krishna's pastimes. They may be physically in the same place. Just like so many people, Rajadhama on the earth, anybody can go there, especially Vrindavan. You know, Vrindavan city is open to everybody. They've got all sorts of materialistic people there, even people doing all sorts of sinful activities. But they're just floating on the surface. The actual entrance into Krishna's leelas, that is very confidential and privileged. Our disqualified persons are not allowed near them. They may be physically in the place, but they're just floating on the surface.
Okay, so I mean to say, whoever is present in Krishna's time, they must have got some qualification.
They should have full qualification. So there may be some rare exceptions. But basically, you're not allowed in unless you're fully qualified. Narada Muni cannot... Narada Muni and Uddhava are dwelling outside of Radhakunda. They have their ashrams outside Radhakunda because they don't feel they can enter directly. They stay outside. They cannot join the rasa dance, Narada. And Narada did in one case. You know, he took a bath and became a gopi, but... But Uddhava doesn't. He doesn't try to barge in on the rasa dance. He stays a kilometer and a half away. You know, because he doesn't feel, he doesn't have the adhikara. He thinks he doesn't have the adhikara. Okay.
Okay.
So we can stop now? Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.